This is kind of an interesting evening for me. Those of you who know me and know tonight's speaker may be aware that we are two single people who will not be single for too many more weeks. So it's with great pleasure that I introduce to you my fiance and wife-to-be, Suzanne.
To be here. I have good news and bad news. And the bad news is I am one of those pathetic alcoholic women who is not capable of stopping drinking when I start. The good news is I haven't had a drink since July 6th, 1991. Wow. That is only by the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous, because I did not believe that I was an alcoholic. I wish I could say I came from a really awful family and my parents were drunks, and so that's all I knew. My parents aren't drunks. When I compare my life to some of the people that I've became acquainted with throughout my life, I have some really wonderful parents. And I had a great childhood. They sent me to private school and so on and so forth. But really, really early on, my behavior started forming this thing where I was never comfortable in my own skin. I had seven brothers and sisters, and I never felt a part of that. So really early for me, I started developing some weird behaviors. And to me, I attribute some of that to my alcoholism. Before I started drinking, I did things like every parent would want to have a kid like me. I spent my allowance by sending it to the missionaries. I was a straight-A student. I wanted to be a nun, you know, all these wonderful things. And something really weird would happen to me. For example, the only time I got to spend with my dad was when I had a report card, and that was the one time I went behind closed doors, and it was one-on-one with him. I had straight A's for 8 years, straight A's, maybe a minus every now and then, but I would leave that room feeling full of shame and that I wasn't good enough, and it was nothing he did. It was me, because he was a really loving man, still is. Anyway, that's why I say some of those behaviors started really young for me, because that's just not normal for kids to be feeling that way. Like, I was never good enough and I never fit in. In my opinion, and it's my opinion, alcoholism and drug addiction has a lot to do with our behaviors and bad choices. So for me, the first time I really remember drinking was when I was 14 and my oldest sister got married and I was in her wedding. We did the ceremony at the church, we got to the reception, and the next thing I knew, they were carrying me into my house. I don't remember how many drinks I had. I don't remember anything about the reception. That was the first time I ever remember alcohol and an experience with it. So right away, it had a really different effect on me than anybody else that I knew of. I didn't start drinking alcoholically then. I didn't drink really until I turned 21. But let me give you a little bit of history of what happened because of poor choices and bad judgment and those feelings of low self-esteem, the things that happened to me from that period of time, from 14 to 21. I met Mr. Wonderful when I was 15. He was one of my brother's friends. He was 19. He already had a warrant out for his arrest by 15, almost 16. I was pregnant. I aborted that child. I never talked to anybody about it. Guilt and shame. I just kept stuffing it and stuffing it. And actually, when I was 16, I ended up running away from home with him. I stole my mother's engagement ring when I left. And I stole that so that I could act like I was married to the guy. Kind of a sick thing to do, but my mom, I'm sure, was devastated. So I did the next indicated thing. We got to the Greyhound bus station, and there was a bus going to Salt Lake City, so we hopped on that bus, and for the next 5 years, that's where we lived. We changed our names because he had warrants out for his arrest already, stealing cars, grand theft, all other, who knows what else, but he wasn't really the cream of the crop, if you will. Anyway, those 5 years in Salt Lake City is where we ended up being. I ended up having two children by the time I was 19, and at that point I said, all right, I guess I better marry him. And for you women who maybe can relate to the self-esteem that I suffered without and the feelings that I described earlier, I allowed that man to beat me beyond recognition time and time again. And so it started even developing even more serious issues deep within my soul for me. I couldn't talk to anybody about it. I wasn't allowed to have a home phone. I wasn't allowed to have money. I didn't have a car. You know, I was pretty much a prisoner in my own home. But I was too afraid. I was afraid to do anything. And I was young. I was really young. And I knew that my parents probably had disowned me, which they never, ever did. So that being said, at 21, he was wanted, one of the 10 most wanted in the state of Utah. And my name then was Lisa, and we had all this crazy stuff. I had my kids that were born under alias names and had created a huge mess in 5 years of being with him. But I decided to turn myself in. I was finally done. And what convinced me was I now have two kids to take care of. And, you know, my thinking back then was, there's no way that I can have them calling me Lisa when that's not my name, it's Suzanne, and, you know, it was just all way screwed up in my mind. So I turned myself in, and I was in a lot of trouble. One, I was married to a man who had murdered a woman, and it happened while we were married. And I was able to do what needed to be done to clean all that up. It wasn't easy and it took a long time, and let me tell you, I felt like there was no hope whatsoever. So I started picking up the drink. I had a job. I didn't finish high school because I told you I ran away from home with him at 16. So my parents, who never turned away from me, I came to live with them. I brought my two kids there. And they let me stay there without paying any rent or anything, and pretty much they took care of my kids. I was not capable of it, and to be really, really honest, I didn't want to take care of them. I was selfish. I wanted to live my life because I had been so screwed over for the last 5 years. I felt like I was entitled to that, and just didn't want the responsibility. So I got a job and I got my GED, and I started going to the bar. As soon as I turned 21, I started going to the bars after work. And then it even got better because the man that I worked for had a bottle of scotch in his drawer, and so even before 5 o'clock I was able to start drinking. And for me, it was the perfect remedy for me to not deal with how I felt inside. I wish I could tell you all the stuff that happened in that 10 years. My drinking was for 10 years, from 21 to 31. I got arrested for drunk driving. That drunk driving took me 90 miles away from home. I was 8 miles away from home at the bar. And 90 miles later, I came out of a blackout and the CHP arrested me. Thank God they did, and thank God I didn't kill anybody on that drive, because I have no recollection of that drive at all. But that's how I drink. I'm a blackout drinker, and there's no predicting for me if I'm going to have one or 40, and am I going to black out after three, or is it not going to happen until I have 17? I never knew. I never could predict what was going to happen. So I had the DUI, and that was in 86. So I was 26 at that time, and the judge had sentenced me to 6 months of AA meetings. So I went to AA, and I sat there with my little attitude and said, oh, you guys are screwed up. I don't have a problem with drinking. I just got lucky, unlucky that night when I was arrested. And it was really, in my opinion, the CHP's fault that I had been arrested. They didn't have anything better to do that night. And I never told anybody that I was out of San Bernardino when I really lived in Orange County and had been driving in a blackout. So I just continued to not deal with life. I could not function without numbing myself. My ex-husband was sentenced to, he finally was arrested a year after I turned myself in, and he was sentenced to 45 to life. And so he spent from 1982 until 2004 when he died in the state penitentiary. I have seen how drugs and alcohol affect so many people. When I first came to AA, I started to tell you guys, I had that DUI, and I wasn't ready to admit I was an alcoholic. I was young. I was 26. I just wasn't ready to give it up. And for the young people that are here tonight, my hat off to you, because I wish I could have stayed then. I was drinking alcoholically then, without a doubt. Instead, 5 more years went by, and it just kept getting worse. I continued to make really poor decisions, and from those poor decisions, I continued to feel worse and worse about myself. I'm the type of alcoholic mom who would choose a boyfriend because he could keep up with me drinking, and I would turn around and he would have my 7-year-old son by the neck up against the wall, and I would still go out with that guy. I'm the kind of alcoholic mom who, even after my son, he was probably 8 at that time, it was a weekend, I was drinking, and he looked at me and he said, you should see yourself, it's gross. And he just walked away, and that still didn't affect me any. So that's why I like to say, not only drinking too much and my life being unmanageable because of it, but because of all the poor decisions, and my judgment is so poor when I'm drinking. Anyway, in 91, my baby sister, believe it or not, like I told you, I have 7 brothers and sisters, and my baby sister had a really serious drug problem. And she said she was an alcoholic then too, and she had told me she was going to AA, and she lives in Arizona and was coming out to visit, and she said, when I come see you, I need to go to a meeting. Will you go with me? And God had it all worked out, because the time she came out, it was right before 4th of July weekend, where I had had my last drunk. I came to in the morning. It was a Saturday. One more time, I had gone out after work. I woke up. My kids weren't there. I didn't know where they were. I didn't remember anything about them calling me or me talking to them. My car wasn't there. That's just how it was for me. It was no big deal. But for some reason, that day, I just said, I'm so tired of living like this. I was exhausted, and you know what? I just wanted to die. I would never, ever consider killing myself, but I did want to die. When I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous in 91, I sat back in these rooms, and the only thing I could think of was how I felt, and that was, life is a bitch, and then you die. And that was it. I had nothing I felt like to live for. I knew I had failed as a mother, as a daughter, as a friend, as an employee. You know, I just felt so empty. I was raised in the church, but I had absolutely no belief whatsoever that God cared about me at all. I figured he had just turned his back in disgust a long time ago. I didn't want to stay here when I started coming to meetings with my sister. But there was a couple things that I heard that I held on to. One of them is one of the traditions that we read. First of all, I was resentful because can't you guys get it? You read the same stuff day after day, meeting after meeting, and I could repeat it verbatim. Why couldn't you guys get it? But now I understand why we read that stuff over and over again. It's important. It's our lifeline. The one thing that I held on to was the only requirement for membership here is a desire to stop drinking. It didn't say I had to have a good job. It didn't say I had to be a good mom and then I could come here. It didn't say anything else except for the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And for me, I held on to that. For a short period of time, I wanted to learn which drink was going to send me over the edge. Because if I wouldn't black out, then I'd be fine. It would be okay. But I couldn't control that. And I'm certain that there is no way I would ever have known because I'm an alcoholic and it affects me different than it does normal drinkers. I know there are heavy drinkers out there. I've known some of them and been around them and they're not alcoholics and I didn't used to think that was possible, but for me, I can't drink like that. I never have. I tried it. I forget which one of you guys read it, but if I go to the nearest bar and try some controlled drinking, it doesn't work for me. Never have. So I got sober in 91. The meeting that I found with my home group, it actually turned out to be a big book study. And initially I thought that was about the Bible. And I'll tell you what, I did not come here to find religion. And I eventually found out that it's the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that they were talking about. I was welcomed really warmly that night. It was a small room, and for me, being in a small group is a struggle, still sometimes, not as much as it used to be, but that meant that people were going to get to know me. And if you knew the kind of person that I was, you weren't going to like me. So I hung on to the few things that I heard there, and I was intrigued by, I wonder what's in this big book. Because I couldn't read and comprehend at that time. I just couldn't. There was so much going on in my head, and I was so restless, irritable, and discontent that it was hard for me just sitting for an hour and a half. You know, it was like, oh, if this meeting could just be an hour, then I wouldn't be so uncomfortable. That meeting I went to for 10 years. And I allowed people to get to know me, and I allowed people to love me, because when I got there, I could not do that at all. It changed my life, being able to let people in and being real. I joke about it sometimes, but you know, I just wanted to be somebody else when I was drinking. One of the things I would do was I would pretend like I was English and I'd have an English accent and I'd, you know, make up all these stories because I just didn't want to be me. And finally, I could start being real. For about 6 months, I just sat in that meeting, sat on my hands, and I didn't drink in between. When I saw people taking chips, I thought, it can't be nice to envision. Maybe they have 30 days, but they're probably drinking on the weekends, or, you know, it just was not, I just couldn't believe that somebody could go that long without drinking, if they said they were an alcoholic. But I just kept coming back to that meeting, and I just kept reading along in the book, and I would read out loud because I was so scared. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't know what you guys were going to expect from me, but again, I just held on to the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And for me, that was huge. I also heard that I should get a sponsor, and I wasn't about to do that. 6 months, I sat there, and it prevented me from really being a part of the group because people would talk about their sponsor and they would talk about working the steps, and I thought, I'm not doing that stuff. I'm just not drinking. But eventually I started feeling some of those old feelings again, like maybe I'm not going to fit in here either. I've never fit in anywhere else. Because there was a part of me that was starting to think, yeah, I think I really am an alcoholic. I've never been able to drink normal. And all of these things that occurred in my life was because my life was unmanageable because I drink like an alcoholic. I am one. So once I was ready to admit that to myself and hear some things in the meetings, because I wasn't able to hear very much in the beginning except for what was going on here. But there was a woman there who I admired so much, and this probably sounds crazy, but to me it made sense at the time, but I saw her be so real in front of people that she cried at the meeting. And to me, that was like, I want to be that real, because I knew I had this mask on for a long, long time. And she was somehow just able to let it all out and tell people what was really going on, no matter how dumb she sounded, no matter how crappy she looked when she cried, because I don't know about you guys, but my lips start quivering and I get snot and all this, and I'm not about to do that in public. But she did. And so I thought, okay, all right, I will pick this girl, because everyone is talking about having a sponsor here at this meeting, and I'm sick of not being able to participate. So I did. I asked her to be my sponsor. And I said, you know, what am I supposed to do now? And she said, well, you know that part in the book that we read about the steps? Well, we'll work on them together. And she started sharing with me a little bit about what she had done with her sponsor. So it wasn't so scary. I had not had any normalcy whatsoever. Well, since I was 15, up until the time I quit drinking at 31. So I said, what are we supposed to do? Where do we meet? And how do we talk? And she said, well, why don't we go and maybe have a cup of coffee down at the beach? And I was like, oh, God, that's scary. Because I hadn't done any of that normal stuff. So we met, and she brought her book. And she had me write down how alcohol had created my life to be unmanageable. How was it related? And, you know, without really saying we're going to work the steps, we just talked about some of those things, and I was able to see how unmanageable my life was because of my drinking. It had been everything else that I attributed my misery to. It was him, and it was those kids, and it was this, and it was my job, and it was me, such a victim. It was everything else except for me. And, you know, it probably took, probably at least a year before I could see my part in it, because I was so used to looking at everybody else. And, you know, if they wouldn't do this to me, if, you know, just the circumstances would be better. If I could make more money, then, you know, I'd be happy. So I continued working with her, and we ventured out to other meetings. I eventually started working with other women, and that is when I truly felt that God was working in my life. It took me a long time to forgive myself, and therefore I did not think God was going to forgive me either. I had shut myself off from people, and I believe God works through other people. I see Him working in your life. It was easy for me to see other women in that meeting, other men too, that God was working in their life. Things were getting better. Man, they were coming in, and they were whooped. They had red eyes. Their skin color was sad. A lot of people were still shaken. Some had just gotten out of jail. And some had had their kids taken away. I mean, just over a 10-year period of time, I have seen a lot of stuff happen at this one meeting that I went to every week, no matter what. But what I saw was people's lives changing. I used to regret the fact that I didn't stay when I came in at 26 until a man named Jim. He came in, and I think he was 73 when he came to that Tuesday night meeting, and he had drank, I think it was like for 50 years, alcoholically. And he came in, and I just was blown away after 6 months to see a change in his life, and I thought, it's never, ever too late. Because I watched Jim, and I watched him come in miserable, and his life got way better in just a six-month period of time. So I was able to let go of that attitude that if I would just have done this, but take steps, you know, where I am right now, working the steps that are outlined in Alcoholics Anonymous, those children that I had, they were 11 and 12 when I got sober, two sons. I never remarried yet. And man, their life was messed up. I couldn't control them as much as I wanted to. When I got sober, they were starting to use drugs and alcohol, and I was so torn because I knew I needed to be there, but I also knew if I didn't stay sober that I wasn't going to be a good mom anyway. And so I went to my meetings no matter what. And it wasn't easy for me. But I knew how much my life was changing through God and the people of Alcoholics Anonymous and working the steps. There are some incredible blessings that came. The first time that it did was step two. When I was, I think it was 90 days sober, I said, I'm going to quit smoking cigarettes because, you know, I want everything to change right now. And I hated the fact that I smoked. I couldn't afford it, and I had already figured out if I quit smoking, I could buy a damn new car, have car payments. So it was such a no-brainer to me, but I was so addicted. So anyway, I had not smoked for probably 2 days or something, and I'm in the shower, and I'm crying, and I want to have a cigarette, and if I don't have a cigarette, I'm going to drink, because I just was a mess. And it dawned on me, I just had a moment of clarity of step two and how I could apply it to my life, coming to believe that a power greater than myself could restore my sanity. And I went, oh, this is how it works. And so I had a cigarette, and I didn't drink, and it passed, and I didn't beat myself up over it, and I continued working with my sponsor on the steps. That was a real key moment where it relates to working the steps in my life and applying them to my everyday life. The next huge accomplishment as far as relationships go, because every relationship in my life was broken, was with my son and my family, my parents. As good as they were to me, I resented the hell out of them. I can't even tell you why. I just did. It was a warped kind of a thing. But when I was able to take a moral inventory of myself, when I was able to take a look at what my part in all this stuff that happened in my life, I was finally able to see that I had made some choices. I had made some really poor choices. And yes, a lot of the outcome was stuff I didn't deserve, but I was not going to be a victim anymore. And I could change some things in my life by making better choices. And let me tell you what, take alcohol out of the picture, and just like that, I was making better choices. Because I am a pathetic alcoholic. I make really bad choices when I'm drunk. There's nothing that I can predict when I drink what's going to happen. So being able to write down my moral inventory, and just like it's in the book, just the simple little columns of, you know, who am I resentful at? How did it affect me? It really helped open my eyes to something I had never looked at before, and that something was me. And all the reasons why I drank. Then came making my amends. And that was another real life-changing event for me. Being able to go over the things that had sat right here for me. Those things when I was a real bad mom, I was negligent and put my needs in front of theirs and was irresponsible. All the things that had happened that I had never forgiven myself for, and if I hadn't, they probably hadn't either. All they wanted was to be loved. And when I was able to take each one of my sons individually and sincerely talk about that stuff that happened and how much I regretted what had happened, it wasn't so much the value of the words, excuse me, but what I knew is that I would never do anything like that again. And it was going to be my actions that proved it to them. Because so many times, and I don't know if you guys are like this, but I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, over and over again, begging for forgiveness and, you know, feeling terrible about it, but doing it over and over again. In the book, the big book, it calls that the definition of insanity. Doing it all over and over again at the same, expecting different outcomes, but getting the same results. So step 9, making my amends, it started the healing process between me and my sons. It started the opportunity for us to develop a relationship. I can tell them today that I love them, and they tell me I love you back. With my family, I had hardly any interaction with them for the first 5 years I was sober. None of my sisters, siblings, parents, just stay away from me. One Christmas I tried it, and I wore a sweatshirt that said, hug me, on it. I thought, I'll fix them. I want them to love me. And so I wore my hug me sweatshirt, and they were all just kind of like, well, she's weird. But I stayed just a little while that time. I was not willing to put myself in a situation where I was that uncomfortable, because I know where that took me before. And until you guys and God filled me with enough strength so that I wouldn't reach out for that drink again, I just stayed away and I went to a meeting instead. And I'm so grateful that I did. There was people there every Christmas when I was longing to be with, you know, people that I loved and people that loved me. Alcoholics Anonymous was there for me. I took several service commitments. And for me, that was, like Marcy did, I was the chip person. At 2 years sober, man, I was feeling the pity. You know, nobody loves me, and I don't have anyone to be with, and my kids are with so-and-so, and I'm not going over to my parents. And I happened to be the chip girl, or the chip chick, as they call Marcy, down in Seal Beach. And that happened to be on Christmas Eve. And I was this far away from just giving in to, I just want to drink I don't want to feel this pain. I don't want to hurt anymore. And I don't want to be by myself. And I'm just so grateful that I had the chips in my car, and my car took me to that meeting, and I showed up, and I gave out chips, and there were people there. And I just kept doing that. I continued to do that throughout my sobriety. I was secretary of a meeting, and for me, that forced me to step out of my comfort zone, and for me to be the one to reach out and say, hi, welcome, you know, I'm Suzanne, because I was getting more familiar with faces, and I know what it's like to walk into a meeting and for nobody to know me. It's real easy for me just to tiptoe and say, I'm out of here. It's not that way anymore. Most of the time, it's not. Alcoholics Anonymous gave me something, you guys, I never dreamt that I could have. And it's not just a sober life. It's a life filled with love, something that I was always, always looking for. I just wanted to be loved. I wanted to like myself. And I was so far away from that, it just seemed hopeless to me. Here at Alcoholics Anonymous, I found hope. That was the first thing I found, was hope. I will admit to you, I would sit back and I would think, this is the most hokey-ass thing I have ever seen in my life. I was never a Girl Scout or a Brownie or anything, and I'll be damned if I'm going to sit in these rooms and talk about my problems with these people. Well, it wasn't just me talking in these meetings. It was other people. And I started relating. It was, yes, I've been through that before. And we overcame some great obstacles together. I've seen some incredible miracles. It wasn't easy for me to see them in my life. It is so much easier for me to see them in other people's lives. So a little at a time, you know, I have let people in. And I have been able to look in the mirror and not hang my head anymore to say, oh, you are disgusting. And that's how I used to feel. And I don't feel that way anymore. It's been some time since I felt that way. And I have to say, it has been the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's been how God has worked through you guys in Alcoholics Anonymous. It just has been an incredible blessing in my life, and I just keep coming back because it was freely given to me, and if there's anything that I can do to make a difference, if you're hurting from it, and if you can relate to any of that, I'm in. It was freely given to me, and I hope that even if you have that attitude that I had when I got here, like, oh, This is the strangest thing. It's okay. It works. I quit drinking and my life got better. 100 times better than I ever expected it to be. I have a wonderful relationship with my kids today. My kids, they're 30 and 31 this year, I guess. Grandkids, thank God they're never going to have to see me drunk. And, you know, God has blessed me with a really wonderful man who, he wants to marry me. And I just, you know, I used to get pissed at God. It was like, when? You're never doing things when I want you to do them. And it's a darn good thing he didn't, because there was a lot of work to be done on me. And, if God had put Bill in my life 10 years ago, well, first of all, Bill would be drunk. Just that one to work. Well, Bill wasn't ready yet, but, you know, my point is, I have learned to have some patience today and to trust that God knows what's best for me. I don't. And I'm just really, really grateful that there is a place that we can have. You know, there's a lot of people with lots of different sicknesses. People are recovering from lots of different things. And I have seen over the 17 years so many people who have come in so broken. And just stopping drinking makes a huge difference. But there's the steps, and there's working with others, and all the other wonderful things that we have that just are life-changing. So I think that's all I have to say about that. I'm really grateful to not be that pathetic alcoholic woman anymore. I'm grateful to be a recovered alcoholic. And I'm grateful for the life that God blessed me with. So thank you all for listening, and just keep coming back.
That's right.
We have a few minutes left for some questions.
Let me control the situation. Any questions?
Yeah,
I quit smoking in 1993. I don't know how many years that is, but and no matter what, I haven't had a cigarette.
Questions.